quantify things. I've spent several years saying I'm not a statistician. And I just thought that there was room in this workshop for something a little pedagogical, a little tutorial. Most of us are interested in vasculature. And a lot of what we have to do is quantify it. If you're giving a treatment, if you're trying to evaluate how much vasculature you got, you gotta figure out how to count it. Okay, 1, 2, 3. And it's not always obvious what is the best way to quantify your vasculature. And I know that there's people here, like the students and so on, who haven't necessarily been thinking about this. So I just want to spend some time talking about how do you quantify vasculature and what are the issues. And I don't have that much to say. And if I make up some of my time, I can talk a little bit about what I really think, which is morphogenesis. So there's some obvious ways to count vasculature. You get an image, and you look and see what fraction of that image is vasculature, and then you have the vascular fraction of the image. If it's a 2D image, you've got an area fraction. If it's a 3D image, you've got a volume fraction. And it's just a matter of counting pixels, and this is very straightforward to do. And this is certainly the most obvious measure. Although you've got to remember things like, don't forget to subtract lumens if that's what you're thinking about. And subtracting lumens can be a little bit challenging, I realize. People are always asking me, mostly grad students are always asking me, is it okay to take a 2D slice and find the 2D vascular fraction and have that representing the vascular fraction in 3D? And the answer is almost always. And it would be not okay if your slice was missing the vessels, right? If the vessels were all oriented this way, you slice this way, you're not going to catch them. Sometimes. Okay, so if your vessels are anisotropically oriented, you may have some issues quantifying a 2D slice. But other ways, it's always going to be okay. Okay, so these are the most straightforward measures. Not a problem. There are issues of tortuosity. We discussed that a bit this morning. And tortuosity is pretty straightforward to define. It's simply the ratio of the length of the vessel following the vessel to the length of the vessel in a straight line. It's a very straightforward measure, and it's non-dimensional. It's a ratio. But I'm not going to discuss tortuosity because the images that I was working with for this talk are not tortuous. A pretty popular measure is fractal dimension. There's a lot of vascular papers where people are showing are reporting the fractal dimension of the vasculature, and this is a nice little mathematical fractal, this is a nice biological fractal. I do not think that this is made up. I don't think this is one of these Pixar simulations. I've eaten these things, they're pretty good. It's somewhere between broccoli and cauliflower, it's pretty good. They're kind of expensive. No, that's a real old. What's that?
What's it called?
The seed packet says Romanesco broccoli, Romanesco cauliflower. The supermarket
comes up with cabbage family.
Supermarket comes up with all sorts of clever names. Yeah.
One thing that fractal dimension I got into an argument with some people I'm working with is whether you quantify. You have to ask: are you trying to quantify discrete clusters, or are you trying to quantify a fractal dimension? So you could have a picture of several clusters, and you can try to measure the fractal dimension of each cluster, or you could look at your whole picture, and you can get two very different results depending on what you're doing for your whole picture or just those discrete clusters.
This is a problem with fractal dimension I hadn't even considered. But you're going
to
hear in a couple minutes a lot of other problems with fractal. What's that?
So basically, the question you have to ask is fractal dimension of what?
Yes. Calculating fractal dimension is pretty straightforward. In brief, just as finding vascular fraction is counting pixels, calculating fractal dimension is also counting pixels. I'm having a few technical problems today.
There's a pointer behind. There's a wooden stick behind you.
Well, it's got
So if this is the original image, I know how many pixels are in the whole thing. This is, what, 256 by 256, something like that. And I can count how many of those pixels are blue. Here's the count. Okay. And we can think of that as covering the image with boxes of size 1 pixel. Size 1 pixel. And how many of those boxes does it take to cover all of the vasculature? You then proceed and take larger boxes. How many larger boxes does it take to cover all of the vasculature? It takes fewer, because they're bigger boxes. And you proceed down the line, taking bigger boxes, it takes fewer of them. Bigger boxes, takes fewer of them. And so on. And then you got this data for how many boxes of a given size it takes to cover the vasculature. What are you going to do with this data? Graph it. And take logs, log, and the negative of the slope gives you the fractal dimension. That's how you do it. It's very straightforward. This is the entire code for it. There's nothing mysterious. Right? It's a very straightforward thing to do. And finding the slope, that's just linear regression. And you can just do it to make sure it really is a fractal. Okay, the method is very straightforward. A little bit of a warning if you're using fractal dimension. So I thought, okay, I got my algorithm. Let's test it on things where we know the fractal dimension. We know the fractal dimension just because they're mathematical. These are mathematical objects, and you can prove with root threes and pi's and whatever numbers that we're familiar with, you get a true value of the fractal dimension. But when you measure with the box counting method, it's not quite on. Why would that be? Any ideas? What's that?
Finite length scale.
Finite length scale? That's not it, because the algorithm has a finite length scale. That is to say, it's not going to change the slope of the regression. It's going to change the length of the regression line. It's not going to change the slope of the regression. Any other guesses?
So how well is the thing aligned with the overlying grid?
Okay, grid effects.
Yeah.
So this one here. So this one here, if I aligned it better, would I get a better? Well, if you rotate these, you still get the same errors.
I don't think you meant, well, rotation, but like as you're scaling your pixels, like the first one was 1 pixel each, so you can very accurately count the number that fit in there. But as you go to say 2 pixels per box or 4, you know, you're going to lose a little bit each time you go.
But in a systematic way, because the measurement is always systematically underestimating the fractal dimension. No matter how many mathematical fractals I tried, this algorithm is always underestimating the fractal dimension. Nobody's got it? It's called JPEG. Because we're using JPEG images and they are slightly compressed. They slightly reduce the fractal dimension. It's not the algorithm, it's the image storage. So that's my warning. We're all using JPEGs, right? Because they take less space than TIFFs and so on. So you're going to get a little bit of an error.
So have you tried with PNG?
What's that?
Have you tried other image formats?
I'm not generating the images. I'm just analyzing them. I'm not in the lab. I'm sitting in front of the computer. But it's something to be aware of. Yeah.
But if that's, you conclude that that's your reason, have you tried to take an image from PNG and then convert it to a JPEG, just use your box counting method to...
No, I haven't. No. But that would be... You were saying?
Can you generalize this to grayscale images rather than black and white? So that instead of counting, just that you weight each pixel by its intensity and still get the right result?
I don't know. I don't think so. I haven't thought about that.
Usually, for grayscale, we just, you know, set a threshold, and then everything goes to either black or white, and then you can go from there.
Yeah, the original image certainly was full color. So it kind of disturbed me to think about fractal dimension of vasculature. When I first realized that this was such a common measure, I thought, no, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense to me. What does that mean biologically? Well, there are some biological observations that people make about fractal dimension. For example, during development, fractal dimension tends to increase, or with various of our treatments that we've been discussing for several days, fractal dimension increases. Okay, there's a fact. I don't think I know anything about fractal dimension of a vascular tree yet from that fact. Tumors. Fractal dimension of tumors tends to be higher than fractal dimension of normal tissue, and the fractal dimension increases in time. I don't think that tells me anything more about the biological interpretation of fractal dimension. On the other hand, bad tumors, high-grade tumors, can have very low fractal dimension. That seems to be, to me, contradictory to these other things, and the more I see, the more confused I'm getting about what does this mean biologically. That's what was bugging me, and it kind of itched at me until I spent a bit of time with this. Yes?
The thing that confuses me is that I don't think healthy vasculature has to have a fractal dimension of 3 so that it can, it doesn't fill all space uniformly, but so that it fills some fraction of space on every length scale so that it can feed all of the tissue. And there was this work done several years ago by some people at Los Alamos and one of the New Mexico universities where they don't assume that it fills, obviously your body is more than just vasculature, but that you can look on every scale and it's the same fraction of vasculature on every scale or something like that. So basically that somebody who's twice as large would have twice as many blood vessels. Right?
Doesn't mean your fractal dimension is 3, but fracticality is an excellent way of getting transport to lots of places. And you see it in the lung, you see it in the vasculature, you see a lot of places that are optimized for efficient transport. I'm not going to really discuss that.
Okay.
Well, so I have a lot of images of CAMs, the quail chorioallantoic membrane, and please don't make me pronounce it again in this talk. I'm just going to call it CAM. You take a quail, you squeeze out an egg. Yeah, squeeze out an egg.
You can do it for it.
They're very cute little birds.
You make an omelet.
Only when you're done. Only if you've removed the VEGF first. Anyway, and you get an image. Somehow a miracle happens, and your collaborator provides you with an image, if you're like me. And you use your box counting method to find the fractal dimension. Okay, so this one has a fractal dimension 1.54 with some associated error, and this one has a fractal dimension 1.53 with some associated error. So basically, these have the same fractal dimension. Do you conclude from looking at those two images that they are pretty much equivalent vasculatures? Not me. I mean, I look at these, and these are quite different, although they have the same fractal dimension. Does that bug anybody but me?
Are they the same magnification?
Yes. Yes, everything the same, except they're from different CAMs.
Probably the volume of the blood that you have in both is identical, but mm-hmm. the thickness of the vessels is different, and the branching patterns are different. So it probably, if you do hemoglobin measurements in A versus B, you're going to get the same number as well.
So are these going to be functionally the same?
No, but it depends on what your question and your readout is.
So observations like this make me uneasy, make me continue to be uneasy about fractal dimension. It does get a little bit better, because...
Could I stop just a second? So for the ignoramuses in the audience, okay. I really don't even have a... I shouldn't be embarrassed, but I guess I don't even... I sort of have this vague understanding that fractals are things that are repeatable at different length scales.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm on the other side of that coin. So, okay. So is it true? I'm just asking a question now. Is it well accepted amongst mathematicians and vascular biologists who analyze this, that the vascular beds taken in toto, you know, are truly fractal objects. Is that well accepted? See, because
I think most normal healthy I think it would be safe to say that most normal healthy vasculatures are.
So there's enough levels of dimension, there's enough orders of size in there that
yes.
it makes sense in terms of fractal.
Obviously it breaks down when you get to the capillary size.
Well, I'm just asking a general question.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to challenge anything.
I'm not getting defensive.
Okay, all right. Okay, that helps me. Thank you.
I think in tumors it's questionable because it's
no, no,
so
I wasn't even, no, I just in the idealized case, in the really idealized healthy individual, no funny stuff, just it's
been measured.
Okay.
It has been measured.
All right, okay.
And to get back to this real nitty gritty of how you measure it, when you take these measures, I mean, these are my measurements from some CAM images, and if this is a straight line, it's a fractal.
Yeah.
It's kind of breaking down right here.
Okay.
And that's because of the size, the resolution of the images, and also the resolution of capillaries.
Okay.
So you can't get any further. If this is not a straight line, it's not a fractal.
Okay.
But usually when you claim it's fractal, you need several decades of data. This is only a decade or less than?
It's a pretty small thing, the CAM. It's small, and if we were dealing with something bigger, we would be able to go up several decades. The problem is that when you are at the small length scale, you can't get any smaller. You can't get smaller than a capillary.
So if that was an elephant, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but if that was an elephant,
the elephant CAM.
No, but if you could look at all the vasculature in an elephant, if we had a precision cast down to the level of 500 micrometers of physical space of an elephant's vascular, but then there would be enough stuff in there that a mathematician would agree that is a fractal object. I don't even know if that's
yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
But the question is whether this is useful for the assays that it's used to mathematically model, and no one's looking at elephants. And everyone's looking at tiny little
okay.
baskets.
Yes.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's
yes.
Okay.
Also, what I think we have, maybe we're going to get into it, is that if you're looking at larger scale and say from the centimeter to millimeter scale, you find the difference fractal dimension when you're going from the millimeter to micrometers. So
if that happens and this turns out to be curved to
right.
some extent, there is a term for it. It's called multifractal.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's sort of it's a subclass of fractal. It still counts as fractal, but the math has to be a bit different.
And isn't it functionally not required to ask anything less than, say, tens of microns? There's a lower limit to where this thing is.
Sure.
Doesn't need to happen.
Right. We have diffusion, we have
yeah.
capillaries. Yes. Right. I'm not saying that, I mean, a mathematical fractal
no.
goes to an infinite number of orders.
Well, so you're making some.
None of us is going to an infinite number of orders.
Yeah. But it's just a matter of.
Put it this way. I postdoced with Jim Murray, who loved to provoke discussion at lunch. And one day at lunch, he said, and I won't even attempt to imitate his very thick accent, and Sandy's not here to tease me about it. He threw out one day at lunch, has anybody ever done anything useful biologically with fractals? And it was obvious what kind of answer he was looking for, but I never like to give the obvious answer at lunch. And my answer was, has anybody ever done anything useful biologically with the concept of spirals? Well, yeah, I mean, seashells are pretty much well approximated by spirals. Okay, and you can tell one species from the other by the measurements, the angles, the spin ratios of the spiral. So yes, it's a useful concept. I think it is a useful concept. But not as useful as it's made out to be, I think. Or it needs a little more interpretation. Let me go on. If things get a little bit better if you, instead of taking the raw image, you skeletonize. You just reduce the thickness, as Louisa was indicating, if you reduce the thickness of all of the vessels to one pixel, and you find the fractal dimension of the skeletonized structure. And that is a different quantity from the fractal dimension of the raw image. So skeletonization, I mean, you just use image processing to remove everything except the last pixel, and it's built into NIH image, for example, which is how we got this. And so you have to be careful when interpreting people's analyses to make sure which one is being talked about. Is it the skeletonized image or the raw image? Because you're going to get very different numbers. There are other things that we can do, however, to measure a vascular tree, other than fractal dimension. Let's move on from fractal dimension, and maybe we'll get a sense of what fractal dimension is. One of the things we can do, and it sounds like various people are already using these measures, take an image and cut away all of the smallest vessels and count how much you've grown out at each stage. Count the vascular fraction of what you start with, take off the smallest vessels in turn, and count how much vascular fraction you have left at each gauge of pruning until you have nothing left. And how do you do this digital pruning? Well, you can make the tree bigger. That would be a dilation. Just grow everything by one pixel. You can make the tree smaller, erode everything by one pixel. And if you want to prune away the smallest vessels, you can do that by taking away at a certain gauge and then growing what is left. And so all of the smallest vessels will be erased by that algorithm without erasing the larger vessels. Okay? So this is how you accomplish pruning. And once you know how to prune, you can cut away the smallest vessels in turn and measure what is left. So here, the original art, these are cam arterial trees, by the way, no venous trees. We have cut away here everything smaller than 48 microns, 96 microns, 144 microns, 192 microns, and at 240 microns, nothing is left but this little bit. And so we can find the vascular fraction at each of those pruning gauges. And once you've got that data, it can be, you have data, and you can fit a model to it. I fit a lot of curves. I won't bore you with what kinds of functions fit those curves. Once you have a model to fit your data, you can pull from that a characteristic length. These are two different images. They were the extremes of the CAM images that I looked at. And so each of them has a characteristic length associated with how fast the gauge of the vessels falls off, how quickly you can prune away the vasculature. Okay? So a length comes out of this. And in this case, like 100 microns or 250 microns for the two different images. Okay. Another thing we can do with the images is, instead of looking at the vascular tree, look at the interstitium. Look at what's between the vessels. And the way we look at what's between the vessels, well, we grow the space around the vessels, and then we know how close we are to a vessel. Or which tissue is how far from a vessel. And I'll call that the complement fraction. It's what portions of the interstitium are how far from a vessel. And this is, of course, a measure of how well they're going to be perfused. Once you've got that data, of course, it can be fit to a model. And again, characteristic lengths come from it. Characteristic distances come from it. These are, again, two images. I think they were the most extreme images that I looked at, 300 microns and 160 or so microns. And this gives us another length, a typical distance of how far a given piece of interstitium is from a vessel. This is another measure of the vasculature. And once you've got that information, you can do more useful things, like look at where the least well-oxygenated tissue is. Is it uniformly distributed? You can do spatial statistics on all of this. And that, it seems to me, an exceptionally useful measure. Yeah.
But you can't analogize perfusion directly to the nearest vessel, but only to the nearest capillary.
Because the larger vessels are impermeable?
They're just pipes bringing in goodies. I mean, I'm not a physiologist,
okay,
but that's what my understanding of it is.
That's
that's where the, where the action takes place, so to speak.
That's a very useful point. I think these could be modified, of course. You would erase the largest vessels.
Right, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
And then find the complement fraction of the larger vessels. And of course, they've got to get oxygen too.
Right, they have, then they have vasovasorum. That's what you call vessels and vessels. Vasovasorum.
You mean beyond coronary arteries and stuff?
Yeah, so if you take an artery, if you take a big artery, it has blood vessels. And they're called vasovasorum. We've got a word for everything.
or a compound word, yeah.
Right.
How helpful to give a talk here. Thank you.
Yeah, just a question on how you obtain the, I guess this characteristic length of tissue from the vasculature. I mean, you're looking at, first of all, it's a two-dimensional figure, right?
Yeah, we're working with cans because they're 2D.
So I can't quite understand how you got that from, I wasn't sure what that graph was, but are you like doing some nearest neighbor, nearest distance from a piece of tissue to a vessel?
So this, let me back up on where this complement fraction comes from. So the black areas, so here's the initial vasculature, and I've just reversed color here because I've just reversed color. You don't need to know why. And so for here, the black areas are the interstitium that is this many pixels away from any blood vessel, okay? And the next iteration is that much further from a blood vessel, and so on. And so if I add up the area fraction of the black areas, it's going to be less each time. So here it might be 17%, here it might be 14% and 8%, and so on.
So it is essentially like, for a given piece of tissue, the end its distance, the end of its distance, and a piece of vasculature. It looks like that's what it would be.
So here, you can't see the scale because of the color, sorry. This is going 0 to 0.9. So how much tissue is not in a vessel at all? 80% for this image. And how much tissue is within 100 microns for this one? About 50% of the tissue, and so on. So we can graph how much is how far. And out of that comes a measure of these curves. That measure for these two curves would be different. Once you've got the images, you can get estimates of how well they're going to transport what they got to transport. Now, getting a really good estimate requires computational fluid dynamics, and I'm not going to do that. But we can make estimates based on real boneheaded simple geometry. We know how big a vessel is going to be. Now, mind you, these CAM images are two-dimensional, but they're representing a three-dimensional structure. And so if I were to take do 3D analysis of those CAMs, I would get different results from the 2D analysis of the CAMs, because the big vessels take up more volume than the small vessels. And it's different from the area of them. Slightly different from the area. Anyway, so we know how much cross-sectional area is in each vessel. We just measure the radius with the image processing and square it, okay, roughly. There's a pi in there somewhere. Don't ask me what the other factor is. That also tells us something about the flow. Assuming quasi flow, which in small vessels is really pretty good. It's fine. And the total flow rate goes as the fourth power of the radius. That's kind of interesting. A couple years ago, they dug up my street and replaced our water mains. They ripped out the 40-year-old mains, which were 2 inch in diameter, and they replaced them with water mains that were 8 inches in diameter. And suddenly all the plumbing started leaking in my house because that was a factor of 64 in how much we were going to be getting at our house. That was real exciting. Showers are great. Anyway, so if we have this information of how much we've got of vessels at each size, at each diameter, we can kind of estimate the permeability of the network. It's not a great estimate because it doesn't take into account connectivity, tortuosity, any of these nice things. But it's some measure of the permeability. So that how much is actually flowing through the network, it's going to have to account for pressure drop and viscosity and various other factors like connectivity and branching and so on, and branching angles, but this is a good enough estimate that we can make. anything to do with each other? Are some of them highly correlated with each other? I'm not going to make you study a chart, but these are the vascular fractions. These are the fractal dimensions. These are the permeability coefficients by various measures. These are the characteristic lengths. These are the three characteristic lengths. In one case, the length characteristic of the interstitium and a length characteristic of the vessels. And some of them are correlated with each other, and some are not. Some of them are kind of obvious if you just calculate permeability two ways. It's highly correlated with itself. That's not a surprise. But the ones to notice here, the lengths that are characteristic, the distances which are characteristic of the interstitium, these are the ones characteristic of the vessels. The length characteristic of the vessels is very highly correlated to the permeability coefficients. This is not a surprise because how well stuff flows through the vessels depends on how big they are. And so they're really measuring the same thing. The fractal dimensions come in here. Now that's kind of interesting. The raw fractal dimension is very well correlated with what Louisa said, simply how much vasculature is there, the mass of the vasculature. That's what the raw fractal dimension is telling you. So you don't actually need to compute the raw fractal dimension ever, because it's just representing how much vascular tissue you have. On the other hand, the fractal dimension of the skeletonized tree is not highly correlated with that. It's independent of that. It is highly correlated, although negatively correlated, with this characteristic length, that how far the tissue is from a vessel. We find from looking at a lot of CAM images. I find that rather interesting, because what it means is that fractal dimension of the raw image is a surrogate measure for vascular fraction. You don't need to measure both of them. One of them suffices. On the other hand, the fractal dimension of the skeletonized image is a surrogate measure for how close everything is, or really how far everything is, how close everything is to a vessel, how well vascularized the tissue is. And also, the permeability coefficient is well represented by this gauge drop-off, which we get from looking at the vascular fractions of the prunings. So what do you conclude from this? Let's look at these. What's the difference between these images? These are all a bunch of CAM images. You can't see the numbers, I'm so sorry. Here we've got the one with the greatest permeability coefficient. Excuse me, the smallest permeability coefficient. This one has the greatest permeability coefficient. You can eyeball it and see, oh yeah, this one has the biggest vessels, the most blood is going to be flowing through it. This one also has the greatest characteristic length, which is to say the tissue is furthest from the vessels. This one has the tissue closest to the vessels. You can see the difference, but here we have a technique for measuring these. Fractal dimension, this one has got the smallest fractal dimension of the images we looked at, and this one has the largest fractal dimension of the images we looked at. It doesn't really tell you that much except for the vascular fraction. So can we conclude then that since the fractal dimension of the skeletonized tree tells us how close the tissue is to the vessel, we can conclude that a high fractal dimension means you've got a well vascularized tissue. Does that make sense at this point? I mean, this seems to be the common wisdom, because these are highly correlated measures. This is common wisdom. So then what happens? Tell me. Suppose you're trying to flow blood through this thing. It's got the same fractal dimension as this. I realize these are not skeletonized trees, but just as a thought experiment here. These are not skeletonized, but as a thought experiment. So here's a fractal dimension. Here's a tree. Here's something with the same fractal dimension. You try to flow blood through that. Is that interstitium going to be well vascularized? There's a few big holes there that are very far from vessels. It's a
useful is fractal dimension here. Yeah.
So the fractal dimension area you're talking about is not the skeletonized version?
I didn't have time to skeletonize these images last night, I'm sorry.
I was just going to remark that any two-dimensional object has a fractal dimension of two, so you have a basically a picture frame that's got a big hole in the middle, and it's got high fractal dimension. I think that's what you're showing up there.
Well, you take all the vessels and just push them over to one side, you still have the same fractal dimension, right? And you have all that space, it's not abstract.
Another great thought experiment. Right, I could just distort this image, it would be the same fractal dimension wrapped around a hole. Good point. So it looks like fractal dimension is highly correlated, of these vascular tissues, is highly correlated with whale vascularized tissues. But it's just a correlation. It's just from the data, it's not a mechanism. And I think what I'm getting at is fractal dimension is a quick and attractive tool, but it's not the thing that you're trying to measure. The thing you're trying to measure is how the vasculature functions, right? And so you need other measures of the functionality. That's the point that I'm